We want to thank Beard Booze for sponsoring this episode of Disposable Heroes podcast. Beard Booze, all natural and organic products for your beard. Remember, you guys, it is the beard that binds us. I have my own signature scent with Beard Booze. Have you smelled it, Mitchell?
No, I haven't actually.
Wow. Oh, we got to get you some. It's got essential oils of grapefruit and black pepper in it. And like I said, this stuff, you don't want to put anything on your body that is synthetic and not just Eitel from the earth. So for the most Eitel in beard products, beardbooze.com. We've also got an exclusive discount code. So if you type in disposable heroes, all one word, disposable heroes at checkout, you will get 15% off courtesy of your boys at Beard Booze, beardbooze.com. All right.
Hello, Yassad.
Two drummers with mics.
I know. I feel awkward.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for doing the first podcast of I think what we're going to call Disposable Heroes. We've been mulling it over, but
it makes sense.
Yeah,
it's an honor, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I figured you're like. Who could I have the best convo with ever?
Stoked.
And it'd be Joe D. So we're going to go back to the beginning and we're going to start because you didn't come into my life really until probably your Santa Barbara days.
Exactly.
So we didn't really, so both of us being from and growing up in the same town, basically, I kind of missed out on the first, we missed out on the first part of each other's lives. So
yeah.
Name?
Joseph Herod Dickens.
And you were born in South Kona, right?
No, I was born in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, so this is another similarity to us, which is awesome because a lot of people. So, do you have a thing where? And then, how old were you when you ended up on the Big Island?
12 years old.
Okay, so you're like, because I was 2 months old. I was born in La Puente, East LA.
Oh yeah.
And then I was 2 months old when my parents moved there. Yeah. So. It's always that misconception like, okay, I don't even want to really explain it. Anyway, so you came when you were 12. So this is all complete. Hey, is she barking too much?
No, I mean,
it's just
whatever.
Okay,
put them outside if you want. I mean,
okay. Anyway, okay. So you were born in Detroit.
Yeah.
And then you went to elementary school and whatnot in Detroit.
No, I was 1 year old. My dad was in residency as a doctor there.
Uh huh.
And then moved to Florida until I was 12. And my dad was an alcoholic, got liver disease, got a liver transplant, lived like another couple years, and then passed away from cancer from the operation.
God, another thing we have in common.
There you go. Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
And
full circle.
So right then and there, my mom's like, what do you want to do? Like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to surf. And she's like, let's go to Kona. I was like.
What was the connection with Kona? That your mom had?
A family friend that was a family friend of mom and dad growing up, lived in Kona for 20, 30 years, and was just like...
This place is rad. You cruise over.
And we did a trip over there, and I was like, this is fucking insane. Like,
yeah.
Just a total grom, like, loving it.
And was that the first time you surfed when you went over there that first time?
I had started in Florida as a grom, but okay. Obviously, like, not surfing well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, that's amazing. For some reason, us being friends for so long, I didn't know that your dad passed away when you were so...
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, my mom passed away like 10 years ago or something. So, then you ended up in South Kona though, right? When you were 12?
Yeah, exactly. So it moved. So the guy that was the family friend, basically like.
And what year is this about?
Fuck, like 97, 98.
Okay.
99 something, 98.
Okay. This makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Because we started Pepper in 97 and then we left Kona in 99.
That's right. And that's like right when you guys fucking took off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What a trip. Okay. So go on.
And so the guy that was the family friend that was our connection ended up dating my mom. So.
Okay.
And that was, we moved to his house in South Kona. Filipino Clubhouse Road, right above, you know, City Refuge, all that.
Okay, so then what was then obviously going to Hawaii, then when did you end up like meeting, I guess jumping forward a little bit, meeting the other boys in Iration and going ending up at HPA, which for those of you who don't know, it's Hawaii Preparatory Academy, which is like the private school on the right. Big Island where we both grew up. Whereas I went to Kona Waena, the public right. school.
I was the privileged one.
Right. So you ended up going, and is that where you hooked up with all the other boys? With Adam
absolutely.
And all the boys?
Yeah. My mom was like researching schools, like, you know, I don't want my son to get beat up at the public school. You know, but also like.
And you guys had, did you guys have any, like, any, when you guys were hanging out in HPA, was there any kind of music, anything?
Not for me. Before, I'd like, when I lived in Florida, I played guitar in a band and just played Offspring, fucking Pennywise, like Green Day, cover songs and shit like that.
Yeah.
Super fun. But I always, like, as soon as we'd have a break, I'd just go jump on the kit and be like, dude, I want to. This is way more fun playing drums.
Okay.
Learned like two beats and went to HPA in Hawaii and never played like any music at all.
Yeah, that's so funny because the same thing with me when I was like my whole musical background is my mom like kind of worked in the like the production side doing like a lot of the concerts in Hawaii, and then my dad was in like the hair metal band The Law, where
yep.
Law Records, oh, yeah. where the label comes from, which we'll skip forward later and right. talk about that and come real full circle. But, and I tried to play guitar at first too, cause my dad, of course, being his son, you know, here you go, you got to play guitar. He got me a Flying V, a red Flying V. I remember when
sick.
I was like, 6 or 7 years old, took some lessons, just didn't really click for some reason. Yeah. And then I got super into like Metallica and Lars. And I was same. Like, I think that was same. Like the whole, like, okay, I want to play drums. Like a lot, like Injustice for All, like Lars, like that's my jam. That's
yeah,
the shit.
That was that's the shit I grew up on is Metallica, Pantera, all that like metal.
Right.
My dad got me a signed ESP guitar signed by Metallica. I still have it, but it's like so fucking old. All the signatures are kind of like it's faded. I mean, like so, I couldn't get any money for it, but it's
right.
a dope guitar. I mean,
yeah, it's about the value to you.
Collecting
brother.
Mold in my closet in Kona. So.
And so listening to all that music came from, you think, Florida? Like you were listening to that music in Florida when
oh yeah.
When you...
I got that kicked down from my sister who like was giving me like Agent Orange CDs and like all that, like
okay.
Operation Ivy, like
this is gonna be interesting. So yeah. when you came to the Big Island, because there was no music over there growing
right.
up, you couldn't like literally you couldn't get it.
Right.
Like we would hear music on surf videos like a Pennywise CD and oh, cool. Where can we go get that? Where can we hear it again? You got to listen to the or watch the surf movie again, and then you can listen to it.
Exactly.
So how is it for you coming to such a barren place like Hawaii, where it's like, you know, so extinct, like per se of music at that time, of that kind of underground music? And you, like you said, were getting handed over Agent Orange CDs and whatnot. So you kind of already had that.
I had it
in
going
your wheelhouse,
in as a Grom,
right?
Yeah. Like it was...
God, so you're like the guy coming in that I would be like, whoa,
like
check out this guy's got, he's got like a whatever, like a Pennywise CD. Oh my God.
Totally, like zero reggae influence moving into Hawaii. Like I remember my parents playing like Bob Marley vinyls and shit. Like that's it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And then, do you think that when you came to Hawaii, were you as an outside party, were you overwhelmed by the amount of reggae that was in Hawaii or did you expect it or?
I didn't expect it. It was totally different, but it was kind of nice. It's not like I didn't like it, but I was still like a kind of a punker head.
Right.
You know, I love punk music, so.
Right. And then, okay, so then, let me think. So moving back to the HPA thing, so you and the boys, you went to HPA and graduated in what year?
Adam was 99, Micah 2000, I was 2001. Case in like a few years later, I think. So.
Right. Case and graduated like last year or something.
Yeah. Sorry, Case.
So then you guys all happened to, how'd you guys all end up moving to Santa Barbara together? I know actually, come to think about it, the generation even before me in Kona, it was your Sky Harris's, your, all those guys. They moved, I remember, and then they ended up meeting Zeke from Oahu.
Yeah.
And they ended up moving to Isla Vista. And I think that was the start of it. Right?
That definitely
I almost think like if it wasn't for like that generation of like Parker kids and like Parker School's another private school that's not quite as expensive as HPA,
right. But
still pretty expensive. But I remember all of them, it almost seemed like they planted the seed for anyone like on the Big Island / the state of Hawaii going to this raging place called Isla Vista. Because trust me, I started hearing about Isla Vista when I was like 15 or 16 back in Kona. I was like,
Crazy stories. God.
This sounds like the like funnest, raddest, like most raging place in the world. I want to go so bad. So how did you guys end up all, was it like one of you went that graduated first and
exactly.
then we're like, okay.
Yeah. So like Isaac Gillette, we call him the general.
Yeah. Yeah.
He moved over here, got into UCSB. Like I did like shitty in high school and didn't do good on my SATs. So I wasn't going to get into a university. So I was like, and I called him and he's like, yo, we got this city college over here. Like you can just fucking get right in, sign up, get in. And there's this place, Isla Vista, like raging parties, hot chicks, there's surf. Like, and I was like, I'm sold, mom, I'm going. Like, she's like, all right, son. Fucking got right in there. And that was that.
Nice.
And then that was
probably 2002-ish?
2001.
Oh. So
I moved in to fucking Del Playa Drive when I was still 17.
So you graduated, came straight over here.
Straight over that
okay.
summer. Yeah.
And that's about the year around the time we released Kona Town.
Exactly. Because I remember you guys played in the backyard two houses down, Malia Bolton and Catlin.
Right.
I think set that up.
Right. Because when we first moved over here, that was our first like, oh, where are we going to play? Oh, we know Zeke and all the boys up in Isla Vista.
Oh my God, Delta. Yeah.
Yeah, Delts went and played up there so we could go play up there. So we went, I remember up there at first. And okay, and then, so I remember then I started hearing from, I think like the Arena Production boys back in Kona about you guys, like, oh, the boys are starting this band or they started this band, Iration. And that's where I think to me too, it gets a little bit like foggy of all the cross, because there was so much cross-sectioning of you guys and Revolution, right?
Yeah, totally.
Because I remember too in 2000, right around the time I think Give It Up got on like K-Rock and we had our first like big push or whatever, and we played a show at the Bowl, whatever that stadium is at UCSB.
Yeah, Harder Stadium.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And it was us, E-40, The Far Side, another band, and then there was some like local band that won some contest to open up, and it was Revolution.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I don't remember, and I almost kind of think like one of you guys might have been in Revolution at that point. I don't know.
It was Rory, the keyboarder, what used to be an Iration.
Okay.
And then, yeah, he was the original keyboard player. It was like
so. I guess
Catlin,
how did how did that all? I think. Like pots start to cook up in Santa Barbara when how you guys ended up there and then like the Revolution guys coming because Rory's from San Diego,
right?
And you guys were all ended up in school together,
right?
Up in Santa Barbara.
Rory, so basically Rory was like lived a couple doors down from us on DP, and like we just knew him through some of the San Diego guys. Like one of my roommates that year was two of my roommates were from San Diego, and so we were just over there drinking beers all the time, and there was a drum kit and they're like bottom of the house, and we'd just go over there and just fuck around super drunk and make noise basically.
Right.
Catlin Peterson, Rory on both two guitars and me on drums. There was a hole in the bottom of the snare. Like it was a joke, but
right.
But that was it. I mean,
so that was the start to basically like
it.
Both bands in a sense.
Yeah. Drinking a lot of beer and sounding really bad.
Right. Right. God bless it. Because I think when we started, it was in Brett's garage when we were super young, but we weren't like drinking beer, but we were sounding really bad. That's for sure. And then we came over here and started drinking a lot of beer and sounding really bad and whatnot. But so then back to why didn't, when you guys started jamming, how come you went straight to the drums? Just because, like you said, before, when you were playing guitar, you would sit down at the drums and always wanted to, like, you just thought it was more fun to bang away than strum away.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, when nobody really, like, knew a beat, and I knew, like, two beats, maybe. So, it'd be, like, there'd be the drum kit, and no one would really know anything. And I knew, like, the straight little 16th beat and the old little, you know, 4-4 kind of deal. And, like, just sit down and just do the beat I knew, which is still the beat I know today.
Right.
All right.
The moneymaker.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's such a trip. So then fast forward a little bit, like I said, we started hearing about you guys when, I don't know, probably around like that time when the boys first started talking and whatnot. And then flash forward a little bit to the first time we got together was when we took you on tour for that Playboys in Paradise tour?
I think officially, yeah, it was the Playboys in Paradise tour.
Okay. And then that
2007, 2008 maybe.
And then you got, and you guys just had the one EP out?
I think so. Yeah. And that was the one with our first release was No Time for Rest, I think. Something like that. So, and yeah, you guys brought us out. That was the start of our career, basically. Like, we didn't have a shot. I think we went out with Natural Vibrations like 2007. That was our very first tour. It was Natty Vibes, just West Coast tour. Super fun. Had a van, just playing terribly.
Right.
Having fun, figuring it out.
Right. Did you think back then, like, because I know like the early years of us being in a band, it was kind of like always, I don't know, just my perspective was like, you know, people ask like, oh, did you think you'd ever be able to make a living from it? And I was like, I always had faith, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But if I were to listen to our first, like, Given It, if I were to listen to it right now, like, and then in retrospect, like, put myself back then, listen to that record and ask me, I'd be like, yeah, I guess that does sound kind of far-fetched.
Yeah.
But, like, what was your perception at that? Like, what was your mind state at that, during those first times of being a band and kind of getting a tour and being like, okay, I could possibly make a living on this, but I'm having fun. Like, is it just like,
honestly, like, I didn't have any expectations at that point. Like, at that point, I was just trying to have fun, like, enjoy myself. Didn't expect a career or anything. Like, basically just having fun. Like, you know, go out, do my best.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until like a few years later when like Micah wrote Falling and it kind of took off and we're like, all right, well, shit, we might be able to like do a little bit more. Picked up more tours, and then it kind of just snowballed from there, basically.
Totally. So, okay, skipping forward a little bit, we can get back to like all the, like the band stuff. But so you recently told me you have started to take drum lessons, right?
I did, yes.
So are you still doing that?
I was last month.
Yeah.
But we don't have a studio, so it's like I get these badass drum lessons from George Pendergrass from Pen 15 Club, Dishwalla, like total freaking shredding drummer, like badass.
Yeah.
And like, I get these badass lessons. He teaches me all this stuff and I can't come home and like practice. So I'm just like, fuck, what's the point of me learning all this shit and I can't come home and play my drums and practice? So I was like, I'm going to have to put it on hold.
Cause there's such that fine line, like between like musicianship and being a career drummer, I guess you could say. You know what I'm talking about, Mitch? There's like that fine line of. I guess it's your. It might even be your like inner compass of like. Do you just write it out of like it's all good? I'm making a living. I don't need to care about my craft so much.
Yeah, I mean,
or do you want to dig into it like you're talking about on the other side? Where I've actually just recently read a really good article from Lars where he's talking about his perspective on drumming, and he said it's just like almost like his like vehicle to do what he wants, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's his vehicle. So it almost made me think like, wow, that makes me think like to him it's maybe like the technicalities of drumming aren't the most important thing to him.
Yeah, I mean, I've come to realize that, but like it's gotten to the point where like,
but where do you stand, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Cause you know, of course, as a artist or as a musician or whatever, you always have your own personal standards.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, where
for
I think sure. I lay on the, like, maybe halfway in the middle, you know, where, yeah, of course, I want to, like whatever, be the best at my craft as I can.
For sure, right.
But I also recognize that I'm lazy at the same time.
Same here, yeah.
You know, but I do, but I'm not lazy enough to not make something happen.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
No, so, I agree.
Like, just where do you stand on that?
Like, I mean, it just got to the point with us where we're playing bigger and bigger shows. We're starting to headline. More people are showing up. And, like, I, you know, basically plateaued with my skill level and my playing. And wanted to just, you know, at least get a little better. I'm not going to do, like, a crazy drum solo, but maybe get a little tighter. Learn a couple more fills. you know, it's not really about the drums in our music. It's about serving the song. So
100%. And that's what I like at the end of
which
the day,
which I love, because that takes the pressure off me of fucking like shredding.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, there's the awesome like downside of it. But I err on that side. I think that's like the best approach for a musician to take towards being in a band / writing music, is doing what's best for the greater good, and that is the song or whatever, instead of concentrating on what can I do to make myself
actively
look rad.
Trying to get better though, like at the same time, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. And just I think maybe what I'm talking about too is just, I mean, having the love and the care and the passion for it, you know,
that's what it's all about. Yeah,
it's almost like that's, I guess, where I excuse a little bit of my laziness.
I went through a weird couple year period where I just kind of like lost it. I wasn't playing well. I was just kind of like bummed on it. Wasn't stoked on touring.
Yeah,
playing shitty, and like it was showing in the live set. And then, I mean, I don't even know what happened. Like, I kind of pulled it together a couple years later and was just like, fuck, have fun. Like, you know, I like lost the passion, lost the fun.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, that happened, like, speaking of, like, my mom passing away 10 years ago, mm-hmm. that kind of whole, my life just took a big, like, dive for, you know, one of those big, because not just the whole, my mom passing away thing, but just my whole life in general kind of blew apart at that time, right. So I had to, like, really, like, okay, you got to buckle down.
That leaks into everything in your life. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, and it just kills a bit of like passion, where I know what you're talking about. Exactly. That feeling of like, okay, I gotta go out here, but I'm not sending it. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm not getting up here and just being like, for lack of a better term, the picture I have in my head is like some like Braveheart thing. I'm not walking in the middle of that stage and just screaming at
fucking
the top of
amping.
My lungs
yeah.
up to the sky. Just, ah, yeah. Let's do yeah. this. You know what I mean? I'm right. more just like, don't look at me. I'm going to come play the drums, and that's
right.
it. So
that was,
yeah. So I think that's definitely like the main thing when it comes to all that kind of thing. But, so back on the drumming thing too, just kind of like more of the like drumming, like nerd stuff, if you could be the perfect drummer, who would that be? Where I say like my perfect is a like split, like between Stuart Copeland and John Bottom.
Ooh, nice.
Stuart Copeland of the Police and John Bottom, because
nice.
John Bottom's like the end all be all for me. I think
for
just
sure.
his pocket.
Yeah.
He makes me feel the best.
Yeah.
Like, not even how it sounds, but you just listen to any John Bottom grooves and you're like, God, I just feel so good.
Yeah.
You know, except that salsa part in the middle of Fool in the Rain. But we'll blame that on Jimmy Page's heroin addiction. But anyway.
Good combo.
Yeah, so that's my combo of like the perfect drummer. If I could make myself the perfect drummer, it'd be a perfect split between the two. So like, what would your perfect be?
I mean, my thing is I think punk drummers are probably some of the better drummers in the world in jazz. Punk and jazz drummers.
Like a Byron from
like
Pennywise?
A Byron, or like a Bad Religion guy. What's his name?
Brooksy,
yeah.
Yep.
You know, isn't he playing for
Avenged Sevenfold now? Yeah. Which
insane.
Goes to show how insane and how wide that
sick
guy's
band.
Strengths
yeah,
are. You
exactly.
know what I mean? Like, he can just sit in the pocket and play some sick metal, like a sick metal groove for
exactly.
Avenged. Or he can go pedal to the metal and play the sickest Bad Religion songs ever.
Yeah, I'd say like a mix between like Benny Greb and like, you know, Byron from Pennywise or something like that, you know? Like,
I like it.
I don't know. Because I feel like all the stuff I've been noticing on Instagram is like drummers that are already like mastered their craft, like gravitate towards like jazz or metal. Cause like,
yeah.
that's like the final resting place.
No, this is good. I like this. Drummers on Instagram.
Yeah.
So
there's
that's a crazy thing nowadays. It's like, yeah, there's so many good ones, and there's such like the difference between, you get like the Stan Bicknell homie. You know what I mean?
Insane.
And that guy's the craziest riffing drummer.
Just triplets.
Ever. Like his foot's.
Oh my God.
It's like
insane.
I don't. He's got the fastest foot I've ever seen. And then you look at Paul. I know you follow him too, because I see you like him every time I like him. Sometimes you beat me to liking him.
Oh shit.
Paul. What is his name? Paul, the super pocket groove guy that does all the loops packages.
Oh yeah, Paul Mabry.
Yeah,
Paul Mabry.
Yeah. Then
Beast.
There's like, he's the exact other side, you
exactly.
know, where he's just. the sickest pocket guy ever.
Not even playing hard, just fucking right in the pocket.
Yeah.
Goes so that's all over.
That's just a crazy thing to me nowadays. It's like, yeah, it's kind of so rad to see there's that outlet because there's all these guys that, I don't know, do you think they would really be as like noteworthy if there wasn't social media these days?
Probably not. I mean, like, that's the only reason why I know those guys. Like, the guy Stan Bicknell he plays like one gig a year and he just...
Yeah.
Like, he roasts coffee for a living.
And I never knew about Paul Mayberry. I know, what a legend.
Right? Guy fucking roasts coffee, and he's, like, the best drummer I've ever seen.
Yeah. But Paul Mayberry, I didn't know
he's
about
a studio
him
until
Instagram.
Strictly
and he sells
studio.
Loop packages, yeah. Right? He makes all those, like, loop packages, which, yeah.
Play a couple bars, done. Loop it. Fucking sell it.
Right.
Guy's got, like, a mansion in Nashville. Like,
yeah.
Three kids. He's killing it, you know?
Yeah.
Selling loops.
Yeah. So crazy.
Badass.
So, yeah, it's so rad. So
it's crazy the difference between studio and live, you know, like, fuck, there's just such a, some people do both. Some people just do studio, you know, I mean,
well,
in our case, we have to do both.
What was your first experience with a click track?
Oh God. Fucking. Oh Jesus. Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
First show on ears and first show on a click. I was fucking stressed.
What about studio? No. What about studio?
Oh, click? Never did a click until like we got ears basically. And we're like, everybody's like, Joe, your tempos are all fucked up. Like
in the studio?
Well,
you guys never recorded
our first two albums? No, first two and our EP never. No, just straight fucking go for it.
Epic.
Yeah.
No wonder it's so good.
Right? What happened?
Yeah.
We got on the machine. Now we're
everyone loves Conatown so much, but that I listen, I'm like, that thing is stiff as fuck.
Now
you
I'm
guys.
A slave to the machine.
So wait, was Time Bomb not to a click? Or was Time Bomb to a click?
I think Time Bomb wasn't to a click, I don't think. Some of it may have been to a click, but like that was like the very beginning, and I was like, you know, like
whoever said your timing's fucked up, send those guys to me, okay? Okay, hey, this is perfect too. So, okay, so flash forward or flash back and maybe forward in our story, back in reality.
Yeah.
Time Bomb, which is the record that
Long
finally,
records.
After all the boys yelling in my ear, you guys got to put out the Iration Boys. That was the record that we finally ended up
Time
putting
Bomb.
Out with Law Records. And I mean, it's amazing. It'll be a good album forever. You know what I mean? And it's so rad. Cause as much as it's done for your guys' career, I mean, it did like awesome things for the label too. Cause as you know, like our label took a break for years and years and it's been back over the last couple. And I think the strength that it had from albums, especially like Time Bomb, it's kind of, you know, we were able to make a kind of like, for lack of a better term, quicker comeback. And hey, thank
for
you guys
sure.
for that, you know?
Of course, man. Well, thank you guys because like we wouldn't be here without you, obviously. And like, you know, getting those tours and getting the kind of the push from you guys was basically what we needed, you know? That didn't happen back in the day. Like nowadays, it's like,
dude,
there's
like
so
the
many
scene,
fucking bands.
The scene
like,
is so huge.
Bands are
it's...
blowing up in like a year or two, which is crazy. It took you guys a decade. It took us almost a decade. Like,
well, it's straight up like I just showed you that Cashed Out record we put out. Like, this is an example for how quick it can happen these days.
Yeah.
We met Greg on the Warped Tour this last summer of 2016 Warped Tour. He gave me their CD. I listened to it. I was like, this is amazing. We put it out. We built them up, built their band. We took them on some of the Less Than Jake tour.
Yeah.
We put out their album on a couple weeks ago, May 26th.
Yeah.
And it debuted number 2 on the reggae album charts. That's how quick it happened. That would have never happened
back
in the day.
No.
You know what I mean? But it's because of things like we happened to release the album on the same weekend Cali Roots was. So we sent them up to Cali Roots. They did the after. It's like you said, there's so much more power in numbers, I guess, in this like scene that we have going these days. But
it's definitely snowballed like since
Sublime
Slightly Stupid. You guys like.
Yeah. I mean, because when we first moved over from Kona, it was Cleo's cousin, Kainoa, who actually had dated Troy Bradley's widow for a while after he'd passed away, who knew the Slightly Stupid Boys, who linked us up with them, and it was just them and us in a van for a while, and then you guys, the Expendables came around, and that was
Revolution,
kind of it.
And then,
getting back to the Time Bomb, so I'm just blown away that there was no click track. That's so awesome.
Oh my God,
so what
easier.
Was the, so you guys recorded that in Santa Barbara?
That was in Ventura. Okay, in Castaway Denver. 7 Studios.
Okay.
JP Hesser.
Where you guys would go on to record Automatic too, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And so take me through the recording process of Time Bomb real quick. Like, how long were you guys playing those songs before?
We basically, Micah just wrote the chords and lyrics, and we got in there and we're like, okay, what do we do now? So we just, a lot of it was on the fly, like, which I look back now and it kind of sucks because I didn't have any drum parts figured out, and I'm in there like trying to lay my drums down and I have no fucking idea.
So
like,
not only was there no
what kind
click
of part I'm doing, like, and I'm just like kind of blowing it basically, you know, but figuring it out as we go.
Did you think you were blowing it at the time when you were recording it? Where you're like, oh God, man, this
slightly, but now I look back, I'm like, dude, fuck, like, damn.
Yeah, good job.
Could have done a little better, you know.
Oh, in retrospect.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I listen to it now and I'm like, yeah, it's not that bad, but like,
yeah,
you know.
But do you think part of that was the nerves? Because I look back on
Kona. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Nerves is like,
yeah,
a lot of it.
Because Kona Town, like, similar, was the same kind of record for us, I think. It was like we had the like first kind of like demo-y kind of record. And then Kona Town, but we went to a click. We went to West Beach Studios in LA, which recorded all the NoFX, all of Bad Religion, all this. So already all those nerves set in. And then we had this super nuts Canadian producer, Steve Kravac, that was just whoosh,
cracking
and playing to it. So it was same thing. I'm like, oh my God, I could have done that so much better. But in retrospect, being in the confines of that click track and everything and not being comfortable with it, I don't think I could have done better.
Yeah.
Whereas you, I mean, not to even just turn the knife even more, but there was no click track. You're right. You probably could have I could have thrown a little flare into here.
A little flare.
Hey, but at the end of the day, you probably did what was right for the song.
Exactly.
And it shows in the success of that record and how that record will go down in history.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's another thing with the click track is like, there was a period where it was like people would, you know, King, our sound engineer for a while and our co-owner was like, you know, it sounds pretty machine-like and pretty stiff. And like, that's where the click track was like almost bite you back, because where you're just so fucking on it that it's like it doesn't sound real, it doesn't sound good,
right? But him being a because like even you know any production guys are going to be like, fuck that, put that shit on a grid because you're going to make my life a fucking living hell.
Yeah.
so it's weird, there's a fine line too,
but also it wasn't so much the click, it was just me not being dynamic enough to like lay around the click. So that was just where my skill level maybe didn't catch up to the playing, you know, so
right,
the music at least. So, you know,
so then what? Okay, cool. That is so awesome.
Dynamics
to know. Yeah.
Key, and then ladies and gentlemen.
Then it was the time where we kind of like took a little break in the label and you guys went on and went to do Automatic.
Right.
Right. And that's when you guys hooked up with the ex guitar player from Cage the Elephant.
Lincoln Parrish.
Lincoln. Right.
Yeah.
And How did that come about? How did you guys hook up with him? And then also, I kind of want to know, like, how was he in the studio as it relates to, like, the drums and I guess percussion parts, too?
So we linked up with him through our manager, Mike.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, they met at some show or something, exchange info. Next thing we know, we're in the studio with Lincoln Parrish, this fucking legend.
Right. And this was it was probably right around the time when they were first huge, right? When they first were blowing up with that.
I think this is like right when he quit the band, maybe.
It's
right when he quit the band.
So that Ain't No Rest for the Wicked song had been big for a while.
I think he was on that. He got the Grammy cred for that too, I think, if there was a Grammy or something. But so we're in the studio. We're like, holy shit, this guy's a legend. Like we're just fucking little guys. And he's a beast. An absolute beast.
Like crazy musician?
Oh, yeah. Like, just coming up with parts, and his guitar skills are just crazy. Like, he'd be in there twisting knobs and just... I mean, half of the Automatic album is, like, rock, and it's him. You can tell. It's not us.
So did he have any influence on the grooves or any of the drumming, or was he more of a guitar guy? Same thing with, like, I think Paul Leary, where when we worked with Paul Leary for No Shame and Pink Crustaceans, he's more of a guitar guy, which... in turn, almost, I think, worked out better for me because it was a little less pressure on me.
Yeah.
But in turn, freed me up. And I think I was able to play more of Yasod came out as a drummer on the record. Whereas like No Shame, I think No Shame's like some of my favorite drumming that I've ever done on any Pepper record. You know what I mean? I think that was that was the first record where we had the feeling of, I guess, for lack of a better term, feeling free and free to have fun, I guess.
And, I agree. And that's it was on that album, for at least for those like 5 or 6 songs that Lincoln did.
Yeah.
It was like, he didn't really tell me what to play, and I got to like just do my thing, which was cool.
Right.
Straight rock beats, open hi-hats, fucking
right.
Crashing through yeah. sections.
Can lay off like, the 16ths exactly, for a little bit. Don't yeah. got the money, don't, can lay off the moneymaker for a little bit.
Exactly. Which was, yeah. which is funny though, because we, looking back, we like, when we rehearse and stuff, we like, you know what's funny? All of our money making beats and tempos are all around 145 to 147
yeah,
BPM.
Yeah, it's that comfortable.
It's literally head between nodding. 145, 147, and that's like our entire set is dude, the same.
I'm telling
tempo.
You though, that's so funny. That like whole like
moneymaker.
That whole like moneymaker just groove. It's like you talk about drummers on Instagram and whatnot. They posted that groove of me on Zildjian from the from Start You Up from our last album from Ohana. Yeah. And I just got just eaten up by a bunch of drum nerds on there because they're just like, hey, what's up, man? I was just waiting for this guy to go crazy, but like, come on, this isn't worth a New Beat Tuesday post. God. Like, I just got so eaten up. And then like a few of the guys were like, no way, that's the pocket groove. That's like the moneymaker.
Yeah,
but
fuck the
but
haters.
They're just looking for like a Stan Bicknell
for
type
sure.
of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Anyway, it's just so funny because like you said, people, I think, sometimes don't realize it because it's the unnoticeable sometimes
exactly.
in music that is the gold, you know, it's that
yeah.
stuff that you don't really notice. That's maybe part of the vibe or just part of whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. It's rad.
It's funny
rad.
Listening back to some like old live stuff. And I'm like, wow, that was kind of a sick role. Like, how did I even do that? Like, I don't even know if I could do that today. Like,
yeah.
And I'm like, I think I'm better now than I was then. But then I like hear some live shit and like, I don't even know how I did that. Like,
right.
It's bizarre.
Right.
Like,
yeah. 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 I couldn't redo that if I tried. that's so funny, but it's just crazy. Cause I look back on it and like you said, this whole scene that's like popped up these days and
blowing
and,
up.
And yeah. And I mean, it's just amazing. Cause it's just more, I think I was having a conversation with, I forget who it was, but how just music we're in, I think the first stage where the branches are so, because in the 80s, like it was metal was the thing that was like branching out
yeah.
into like thrash metal, doom metal. You know, you watch that like the History of Metal show and it goes into all the
yeah.
things where besides that, I don't think there was like a ton of subgenres, right? Because alternative
not
didn't
really.
Hit till the 90s.
No, I mean,
like alternative rock.
Yeah.
Didn't really hit till the 90s kind of thing. And now it's crazy because we're seeing it, I guess, closer to like our world where like
shit's blending and
yeah.
melting into each other.
Yeah. And like, I guess for lack of a better term, you know, the Cali roots, like Sublime reggae
yeah.
kind of scene is even starting to
right.
branch out. Hence, like you said, all these like people, all these people that are touring with each other, all these like different opportunities
yeah.
that are there now. That weren't there when we were first coming up, you know. Which
and I think a lot of that has to do with social media.
Yeah,
like the majority of that.
Yeah,
social media.
Like, totally. Well, because you look at, I mean, you look at like we just announced our tour yesterday, which you guys are leaving soon as well.
Right.
And going out with Tribal Seeds, you know, they're a band that we've never toured with either.
Right.
And
they shred.
You look at. Like they're like social media numbers and they're like a prime example of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just like absolutely smashing it on there.
For sure.
And we're able to do these, I guess, whether you want to like it or not, it's like pretty substantial tours in the music
totally.
Industry, which, you know, whether anyone else likes to like recognize it or not, like, yeah, we're making some noise out there with this, like, little
totally,
like subgenre of like bands jamming downstairs in
right.
this little place in Isla Vista. Or
but it's cool that we can tour with bands like Catastro that aren't even reggae, you know.
That,
and it's cool to bring them out on a tour or have them because it's you're kind of blending shit and attracting different people. You know?
Right,
it doesn't have to be like strictly roots Rasta reggae, man.
Yeah, I guess I guess that's something to say about the fans and the people that are listening to it because I've heard. Speaking of Catastro, Stravers,
Stravy boy,
tell me because we put out their record on Law last about a year ago, and I always trip out on them because I'm like, hey, how do you guys take it that you get so much love from this, like, quote unquote genre.
Yeah, exactly.
But they don't even play a lick of reggae.
Exactly.
And Stravers, because Mitch and Cleo, obviously, they produced the record and we were all hanging out at our studio. And Stravers telling me, he's like, no, dude, you don't even get it. Like, it's crazy. This one kid ran up to me, like, at a show, after a show recently, and was like, Andrew, you're my favorite reggae drummer of all time.
That's just awesome.
Like, and I just take that as like, oh, I guess you guys are so like open-minded that you're just like, oh, like, yeah, the Guilty Through Association. And they just like the music. So
he's the rock brother. He's good.
Yeah. Oh, he's
boy. He's a beast.
See, he's the type, when I talk about you wanting to be your best at your craft, like I was talking about earlier, he's the type of drummer, I think he's the perfect balance. Because he's so skilled to me, or like a Maddie from the Dirty Heads, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they're
totally.
They're so solid on the skilled side, and like on both sides of being just like a touring musician and a skilled drummer.
Yeah,
they're
totally.
Like the perfect like
such
split
a good
difference,
blend, like,
I guess. You know what I mean? Where like your shirt, I consider myself more like a animal. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just gonna get back
Beast.
There and. I'm gonna.
You probably.
I'm
gonna
look.
Than
I'm gonna look at. I'm gonna look at the sky and scream as loud as I can and just pound the drums.
Yeah, yeah. And it's absolutely working.
Yeah.
So. I remember playing on your kit during a couple of those tours, and like, you know, like there'd be fresh heads, and then there'd be fucking holes in all the toms. Like what? That was one show. Like what the hell, dude? Like.
We had to change those up.
You know what's weird though is. I don't break that many sticks.
I don't either anymore. I think
I've never. Yeah, I don't.
I used to a lot, but now it's like.
Yeah.
I think it's just the way you end up playing and shit.
It must be the way because then there's a whole nother side of drumming, which is you want to get real nerd is like the whole which you were telling me when you took lessons from the Dishwalla Playboy about even holding your sticks the
right
way.
Holding your sticks. Yeah, that's why I went in there. I was like,
because you're not supposed to get blisters.
No,
you're not supposed to.
Yeah, snare hand. I get them. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But definitely. If you're holding your sticks in drummer terms correctly, you're not supposed to. It's like, oh my God, I saw, I don't know if you might have seen this too, Mitch, but Josh Freeze posted his warm-ups that he was, because he's on tour with Sting, obviously, now because he left Sublime with Rome, and he's doing his warm-ups that he does to Frank Zappa song.
Jesus.
And it's just all...
fingers.
He's not even moving. Yeah, it's all fingers. Yeah, and he's going back, and he's mouthing it too. He's like, three, six, six, five, four. Like, and not even, I don't know how he even remembers in state, but it's crazy. That level of brain work
that's like,
involved with your drumming is crazy.
That's like trained musician though. Like,
Cause then you think about someone like Freeze too, who has such feel involved in it too. You know, you know what I mean? I think another one, have you ever got super deep into Danny Carey from Tool and like really listened to his?
I've looked at some YouTube like drum solo shit of his where it's just
even
super
just
cool.
Yeah, even just the records, and I really he's such to me I don't know, like a lot of people would probably kill me for saying this, but in my opinion just like a better version of Neil Peart from Rush. Because Neil Peart is so technically good but so stiff to me.
Right.
Where Danny Carey is so technically good and has so much groove and so much feel and just like everything. He's almost like kind of the closest maybe version to like a John Bonham and Stuart Copeland put together, like of living drummers.
I've always loved Tool, and Danny Carey's always been like one of my favorite drummers for sure. I mean, Neil Peart, obviously, but like, I don't know. I'm definitely more on the metal punk side. So
who's your top three?
Oh my God. Fuck. I don't even know. Like,
I know it's so hard.
That's like asking.
I could say Bonham, Copeland, and Grohl.
Grohl definitely up there.
I just got back into the Queens of the Stone Age album he played drums on, that Songs for the Deaf. And you talk about some fucking musical drumming, man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Queens of the Stone Age. I love that.
Here you go. Favorite reggae drummer.
Oh shit. Bimwala.
Yeah?
My boy, probably.
Okay.
Les Ludiazzo. He's a beast.
Okay.
That's one, but also Matty Ochoa. I really like him.
Nice, nice.
Because he's powerful and he's got dynamics.
Nice. Rymo. I'm going to throw
Rymo.
Rymo. Super beast.
Yeah.
And then So I got the did you come out to any of the shows that we were with Stupid when Sly and Robbie was on that tour too?
I think I did.
Dude, Sly Dunbar. Dude, the lowest guy. The lowest sitting drummer I've ever seen.
Dude, his snare was like up high though, yeah. Like,
yeah,
I can't remember snare was like up at his chest and he was just like
and then they had a because you know Sly and Robbie, they've backed everyone from the Rolling Stones to everyone, and they're so funny. We're talking to them about all their sessions and they're like, no, man, we go into those two takes max.
Two takes,
that's
man.
It. And I was like, how's these gangsters? I just see them. They're just like,
when we first started though, Adam and I, like Black U Herders, Sly and Robbie were like definitely our biggest like drum and bass influences. Sly and Robbie, guaranteed, hands down.
Just, right.
You know, like the Rockers groove, doots, 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 that, and all the 16th grooves, like so simple, but so like tight and sick. Like,
and because
laid the foundation, I think, for our kind of rhythm section.
Totally. I mean, and also like Black Uhuru was kind of the first ones besides Bob Marley to kind of hit the mainstream back in the day.
Yeah, they were touring, right? Huge.
That Live at Red Rocks video, like, are you kidding me? That thing's like one of the end all be alls.
And plus those two, the Sly and Robbie played for like every reggae band in the genre and like, you know, fucking legends. Everybody knows them. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, no, it was seriously amazing. Surfing and drumming. Or just music in general.
Correlated.
Yeah. What's your...
not even like, I mean, totally opposite, but surfing, like, I don't surf as much as I used to, which is my own fault. No, but,
yeah.
Like, once I'm done surfing, you have such a good vibe and feeling, and you're happy, and you're, like, positive, and you're like, fuck, I just got this groove in my head. I want to go play my drums right now. Like, that's my whole connection. Plus, you're getting exercise, you know, and... I don't know. Every time I'm done surfing, I want to go play my drums,
right.
Basically.
So you'd say like it directly inspires
your
musicianship.
Yeah. Or I'm in the lineup and I like get some beat idea and I'm just like trying to fucking play it out in the water, you know?
Right, right, right.
That's everybody's looking at me.
Yeah, totally. I know, finger drumming. It's a beautiful thing, right?
But there's also a thing where like, I don't know, I could surf all day and never play my drums and then I feel guilty. Like, fuck, I'm not playing my drums enough. Like... Adam and Case, they don't care. They're like, just fucking surf, you know, like.
Yeah, as far as practicing.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But like, they're okay. But if I don't, like, I really suck. Like, if I suck, the band sucks.
Right. Which is the huge thing about.
Not to say those guys suck. I'm just saying,
No, 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 not at all.
Like,
but
if I blow it, it shows.
Yeah.
Like, hard.
No, what you're trying to say is no one hears anyone's mistakes as much as a drummer's mistakes.
Oh yeah. And I fucked up. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
A couple of life-changing moments for sure.
Totally. So how much do you guys rehearse as a band before you guys head out on tour?
Not enough. I mean, that's mainly because there's no studio in Santa Barbara, so we either have to go to LA and rent out fucking like SIR or go down to one of the other venues and ask if we could play in between gigs or something.
Right.
So basically we rehearse like maybe twice, which is like just ridiculous. You think bands practice every day. Like we have months off and we practice twice, which is crazy. Like I hate it because I want to play my drums.
Right.
So we make a set list, figure out what we want to play, figure out the order, and try and figure out a couple ins and outs, intros, outros.
And that's it.
And then we run the set straight through a couple times, done.
Yeah.
That's it.
And the whole thing's to a click?
Most of it. Sometimes, like, it's supposed to be. Don't tell anybody else. But sometimes I'll start it with a click, turn it off. If I'm not feeling it, I'll turn it off.
Oh, so it's just you that has the click?
Me, Micah Brown, Kaysen, and our trumpet player, Drake, has the click. Not okay. Micah or Adam. Micah can't handle it, so.
Okay.
Micah Poosh.
And then you have control of it, though, where you
I have control of the click. And I change it song to song, so.
Okay.
But we have recently, since we've been working with King David, a lot of our shit is, we have a couple samples that I hit on the SPDS pad that has to be completely on time. So like have to be on click basically.
Loop type of things or?
Like a couple little, like I'll hit it. It's not like we're playing to a track, but it'll be a section where I hit the pad, lay off the drums, let the loop go, come back in when it's over.
Right. 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 So it's gotta be on a grid or else.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You ever have problems with anyone that's not on the click? Like, being like, yo, Like slow down or you're lagging, not you got to like, hurry up because they don't know that they're...
Sometimes. Yeah, there you can tell like just little sections here and there would be like push or pull kind of thing, but not too bad, you know. And that just has to do with like live sound. Can you hear it? Can you hear the drums? Can you not? You know, it's a lot of our shit is throw and go, so we don't get sound check.
Right, right. Well, especially yeah, for this summer too, you guys will be direct supporting, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, but it's never been bad. I mean, it has been bad, but.
Right. But, are you directly talking about the click track?
Yeah, but just, you know, it's never for an entire song. It's only for like a section if someone like loses their place or something.
Right.
Know?
But then you got to kill it right away though, right?
Yeah.
And
totally.
I'll shut
it off. I'll wait for the time. Boom. Hit it with my finger. Turn it off. We all reconnect. And then I can go back in on the beat, hit the button on the kick or the snare or something, you know?
Right. Right. And you're just running it all off the Roland?
No, I have the
little doctor,
Korg, Dr. Dot, or whatever it is.
Right, right, right.
Which is pretty sweet. And I got a little foot switch just to click up from the program. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I love the click. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of comforting.
Well, it's comforting live, too, because, I mean, it's like the click doesn't lie kind of thing.
Doesn't lie. The click doesn't lie.
Right? Because I remember, I've had, you know, there's those times, those early times in the studio where you're trying to convince yourself that, nah, that thing must be off a little bit.
Well, that's the thing, because like we'll be playing live and Michael will turn around and be like, slow or fast. And I'll be like, dude, we're on the click. Like, you know.
Right. And well, and that goes back to the whole thing of, you know, that you hear the drumming mistakes the most.
Absolutely.
And you hear the drumming the most, even though you might not hear or you might not know that you're hearing it, you know.
For sure. And I feel like that thought in my brain has like contributed to me being like more timid, like in a live setting, like where I could try this role, but I don't, because if I fuck up, it's going to suck. So like, I just, you know, I'm trying to get better about that.
Right.
Branching out, getting ballsy.
Right. Cause in an ideal world, it's like you want to have no inhibitions and
just exactly.
Right.
Right. Right.
And like, you'd think the benefits outweigh the consequences of,
right?
Like you said, those few things you get where you're like, how did I do that?
Right.
Those good mistakes or whatever.
That's where like nothing mattered. That's when the gigs like nothing mattered. So I was like, ah, fucking whatever, you know? But right. Now it matters. People pay to fucking see us. So it's like,
yeah,
they want to hear the songs and they don't want you to suck. So
what's your favorite song to play of your guys live?
Oh my God. I love the new stuff we're doing. Like I love playing Reel In. Midnight, I love playing. Even Fly With Me, I love. It's just different. It's more dynamic for me, which I like.
How do you like having a percussionist?
It's awesome.
In the band.
Having a tambourine is fucking life-changing.
it's like...
For a drummer, because like you want somebody to fill that gap between the hi-hat and the groove.
Uh-huh.
And somebody doing it, you know...
Yeah,
fucking really just fills that pocket.
It's like a super musical click track that just makes the song sound better.
And it's so inherently dynamic that it's just something we needed.
Well, it's funny because you'd think that would almost maybe or is maybe going to play towards you feeling like, okay, even if I do make a little bit, even if I fuck this up a little bit because I'm going to try to go outside the box and do this role, I've got a tambourine playboy over here that's gonna hold that up for me.
Totally.
And maybe, you know what I mean, and whether it's noticeable or not, give you that whatever air with no caution.
Yeah.
You know,
and Drake, the new, our new trumpet slash percussion
Drake.
Player is
my,
great
my bad,
amazing
Drake.
He's the man. Went to fucking I don't know LM or LMU or I don't know.
And
he went to
band.
College for trumpet, basically.
He joined the band when? And is he an official, like, is he part of the band now? Or
he's
part of the touring band,
yes.
I should say?
Yes, he is. Highly skilled musician, very good at trumpet. You know, has that musical brain,
right.
You know.
Was he in the studio with you guys when you just did Fly With Me?
Yes, he was. He laid the percussion and some trumpet parts. And, like, now... I mean, I don't know, because like I played drums and fucking left, basically.
Right. Right.
But and so, but live, he's so versatile. He's doing percussion, trumpet. Now we got him an SPDS pad. He's playing, you know, little sounds and shit.
Right. Totally.
Which takes little stuff off my back.
100%. And then, so what are you guys gonna do? Did you guys just record the one song? Or you guys?
No, we recorded the whole.
You guys recorded a whole album.
Basically, a whole album. Yeah, Fly With Me is the first release, and we're trying to get some features. That's kind of what we're lagging on.
Yeah. So all the drums are done.
Drums are done.
Nice.
Drums are done.
You happy with it?
Yeah, totally.
Is it a lot of? Is the whole thing going to be kind of similar to the like, kind of the vibey vibe of Fly With Me?
Absolutely. Yeah. And King David produced it. Dave Manzur, who's kind of contributed to our sound over the last couple albums and years, is a beast. You know, he comes up with these dope little like kind of sections and beats and stuff, and we just kind of evolve it from there. Him and Micah, basically.
So what are King David guys? Do they have, are they real opinionated about the drum world of recording?
King David, he is, which I... He's the first guy that's actually been like, try this, you know, which I kind of like.
Does he know, okay, there, I don't want to like, not to talk bad or anything, but is he one of those where it's like he's trying to tell you something, but not being a drummer, which, forgive me if he is a drummer.
Yeah.
He does, like, he can't communicate it to you, or is he good at communicating what he wants you to play?
No. No one's ever been good at communicating any kind of like what they want me to, like, if like Mike or Adam or something, they're like, like, I don't know how do I interpret that, like, that doesn't...
King David does have an opinion where it doesn't feel good, maybe.
Not necessarily. Like, I honestly, I get, like, immediately I know what he wants, but like I just have to fucking figure it out and play it, basically.
Gotcha.
So, but yeah he's been good. He's been really good for our sound, I think.
Yeah.
Evolved it, at least in a positive way.
For sure. Because I definitely think with your drumming, in my opinion too, it has like bloomed out a little more, which I don't know if it was starting with working with Lincoln a little bit, you know?
Lincoln and then King David, yeah.
Yeah, whereas compared to the earlier stuff was kind of just more of just that pocket groove.
Pocket groove, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you'd probably say the same thing, right? It's kind of like you've been freed up, or
been freed up.
Whether it was a conscious or unconscious thing, it's evolved into that.
It's evolved because like before we had the producer, like, you know, Micah would write the song and we'd kind of conform to the usual beat. It'd be like, you know, guaranteed 16th beat.
Yeah.
Something around the song. And now King David comes in and throws a loop, does these totally different beats and sections. You know, he comes up with the idea and I basically lay it down. So, you know, it's more hip hoppy, which is cool. Anything but a 16th beat, I like.
Right, totally.
And it's good in the live set because you play fucking 3-4 16th beat songs in a row. It's like at this relatively the same tempo.
Yeah,
it's totally. Pretty monotonous.
Totally. Nice. So what? So you guys are doing the tour. You're gonna put out the new album, and then. And then what are you guys doing for the rest of the year?
We got a fall tour lined up. We're trying to get support lined up right now. And time off. Like this is the longest tour we're ever going to do right now.
In your whole career?
In our entire career, yeah. So yeah. We're like, I'm kind of like, oh shit, I don't, you know.
How many shows is it?
Oh, I want to say 40-some, but it's over the span of the entire summer, so... You know,
a little bit of breaks.
Yeah, like the stupid guys, they fly home to see their families and shit. So
right,
like there's 3 days off here and there. Like every week, there's 3 or 4 days off. So
and you warm up before every show, huh?
I do. I've kind of gotten into that. Like you influenced me in the beginning. Like you're like, fuck it, I'm not gonna warm up. You just get out there and just fucking shred it.
It's that laziness.
You're just like, I'm not gonna warm up. I took after you in that sense.
Yeah, but then you realize, like, it's probably not the best.
Well, I mean, it works for you, but then, like, I don't know. But, like, we just watched that Josh Freese video where he's just sitting there doing singles on the pad.
Right.
And I do that, put on my favorite song, whatever it be at the time, you know.
Is that how you, that's kind of like.
Singles, doubles, paradiddles, like, fucking back and forth, you know.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
And then is it kind of a noticeable thing for you from when you didn't warm up to when you started warming up?
I think it just builds my confidence before the show. It's not like I'm going to go out there and do a crazy drum solo because I warmed up. It's like,
or it's not, are you going to like, this sounds so funny, but is it like you're going to cramp up or something if you don't warm up?
Maybe not even that. It's just
a confidence
thing.
It's a cold
turkey.
It's almost like a mental
and cold turkey. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's worked. It's worked.
Yeah, that's a, that's. Yeah, I'm still not quite there. I've been in and out of the warming up thing, but. Well, sick.
But your kit's mental. I love that. It's Tama, right? Tama.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good. What are you playing right now?
I got the Ludwig Vistalite. It's 1970.
Right. That you just got the guy used.
Got it from my buddy Greg in Florida or Nashville actually.
Okay.
Sold it to me. Got the 16 and 18 inch floor tom. Just total beast section. But yeah.
Right. I know. I played the thing on the last tour we did together.
You did.
I
remember when we were doing,
yeah. It feels super good. You got the black dots on there.
Yeah, I had those on there.
Yeah, those things.
I switched it over to Evans though.
Oh, you did? Nice.
Yeah.
So
I got Pro Mark by Diodario and
Pettit and the Steve and the homies over
there.
Yeah,
it up. Yeah.
Nice.
Got my signature sticks out.
It's funny because there is that whole fine line of how good a drum sounds and feels, right?
Because if my drums sound good, I play better. Like if my drums sound shitty, it gets in my head. I'm like,
right. But you know that whole just the feeling of a stick hitting a drum.
Yeah.
Where for me personally, it's like when it doesn't like sink into the drum, it doesn't feel good to me.
I agree. Like I still don't know how to tune drums.
That's like half of how I tune is how it feels.
How it feels.
Right.
The rebound kind of deal.
Yeah, because like if when I'm tuning. Part of the feel of the drum coming back at me.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, I've tuned your drum.
Yeah. It has to like grab the stick in a sense to me and have a little bit of a give where if I hit it and it feels like I'm hitting up against like a plastic wall or something, you know, it just doesn't, it's such a
feel.
I think adds to that confidence or that just feeling comfortable on stage, you know, to scream up at the sky as loud as you can and send it, you know?
Yeah. So. And I feel like, Mitch, you tune a little bit looser, at least the snare-wise. It's open. You leave it wide open. No gels or anything, right?
No, I take Mike Fasano trick where I take a part of the moon gel.
Yeah, yeah.
Cut just a third of it off.
Oh, okay.
And I use that right at the top of the Remo crown.
Gotcha.
Right at the top there.
Just for overtone? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's for overtone. That way the drum itself has some resonance and ring.
See, we had Carlos for a lot, and he was setting my drums up and kind of not really tuning. He'd ask, and I'd be like, I don't know if you know what you're going to make it sound worse, you know? Feel it out. Like,
well, because there's those two. I think with music in general, like, feel, I think, will...
Mish, come on.
Hey.
No, just the whole thing of, it's like there's the difference of, you know, you take one of those odometer things to the tension readers.
I had one of those for a minute.
Yeah.
Couldn't ever figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, never figured it out.
It's like you could do the tension and it's equal all around, but it doesn't feel good.
Doesn't sound good,
I don't know about you, but I would be like, I'm going to go with the feel more than like the perfect.
That's what I went with, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I backed that, but... I don't know. I think that's kind of it. I think we can wrap it up as far as the first episode. Thanks for the Kona coffee.
Brother. Absolutely.
The Kona coffee was amazing from the island we come in. And thanks so
good
much.
Good potty.
Man.
Thanks, brethren.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this episode of Disposable Heroes. Make sure to go out there and subscribe to the podcast at iTunes. And also, we want to thank beardbooze.com for sponsoring the episode. Disposable Heroes at checkout for 15% off beardbooze.com. Thanks again, guys. Aloha.